Hey, it's the Super Bowl 60 recap as the Seahawks destroy the Patriots with a great defensive performance. Welcome to the Shonks and Tanier NFL podcast for Monday, February 9th, 2026. I am Aaron Schatz, the DVOA guy from FTN Fantasy. He is Mike Tanier. You know him from his Substack at miketanier.substack.com. We'll take your questions and comments about Super Bowl 60, which a lot of people did not enjoy because of the lack of offense. I thought if you liked good defense, it was a really good defensive game. Like, even though there weren't turnovers really until the second half, you had great pass pressure. You had Christian Gonzalez with a couple of really good plays, just like slapping the ball away. Mm-hmm. And the Seahawks won. And as a Patriots fan, it's a little bit of a bummer, mm-hmm. but it was a great season and very enjoyable. Yeah. And as me, my job, I feel very vindicated because as people who've been following on social media know, I have been riding the Seahawks all year long. We have had them higher than anybody else all year long, and they won. And now we don't have to talk about all these teams with these great regular seasons that can't get it done in the playoffs. The Seahawks got it done.
You posted where they rank all time, and you'll probably want to do that. But you posted like who was number one in DVOA week by week by week. And the Seahawks hit the top in like week four or week five.
Week three.
And from then on, we're just every once in a while, the Rams would pip them for like a week, and then they'd be on top for 2 or 3 weeks, and the Rams would hit them. But then for the rest of the season, it was the Seahawks.
Yeah, the Seahawks dominated. They were number one for almost the entire season. Mm-hmm. In the DVOA article on FTN, I talk a little bit about why I had them higher than EPA-based power ratings. Mm-hmm. Some of it has to do with downweighting turnovers, because obviously their offense had a lot of turnovers, and then suddenly in the last four games of the season, including the entire playoffs, they did not turn the ball over a single time.
Amazing.
And then special teams, right?
Right.
Most EPA methods just do not include special teams. And the Seattle special teams were not only really good, but they continued to be really good throughout the playoffs. It was predictive, in fact, that they were going to get value from special teams. Some of those punts last night, the yes. one that rolled and ended at the one, Patriots fans were like, oh, come on,
Right. But that's what's been happening. I mean, Dixon wasn't the guy getting the attention, but he was having a very good season, the punter. And he punts wobblers, and there was a muff by the Rams in the championship game. That kind of thing happens. That was the best punting Super Bowl, I think, since the Rams-Patriots
Super Bowl. Right.
Right. Yeah. Well, Ryan Allen was like dropping these like high hang time 48 yarders like into the corner, coffin corner.
Todd Singer says, rough game for the rookie Patriots offensive lineman. Tough matchup. Mm-hmm. Yeah, first of all, I think that Drake May needs to work on the internal clock in the offseason. Some of these plays, he needs to get the ball away. He needs to know when he's under pressure. Mm-hmm. But also, Will Campbell has had real problems all playoffs. Yeah. Jacob Wilson got destroyed on a couple of plays, the left mm-hmm. guard. And after that, May was feeling pressure even when there wasn't pressure.
Yeah.
In fact, I would say he was seeing ghosts.
He was seeing ghosts. He looked like old Darnold back there. It's going to happen to a second-year quarterback. A couple of things, by the way. Garrett Bradbury's going like this because he did not play well center either, but like the guys to his left got all the attention. I have a theory in addition to the idea that, like, okay, maybe the schedule was kinder to – Campbell than everybody else. These guys just hit the rookie wall.
It's possible.
Right.
It's possible. I mean, Campbell had an injury, right? He came back from that MCL injury. Maybe he wasn't fully healthy.
Right.
When he came back from the MCL injury. Wilson came back, I think, from an injury as well.
Yeah. And then they're three weeks past where a college season would have ended. And it's like, oh, yeah, normally you'd be resting right now. Here's the Texans.
Yeah.
Here's the Seahawks. It might have just been too much too late.
The Seahawks got a lot of pressure with four, and then they started blitzing Devin Witherspoon.
Right.
So one of the interesting schematic things is the Patriots used 11 personnel for most of the game, which mm-hmm. makes a little bit of sense because I ran numbers before the game that the Patriots were better in 11 personnel than they were in 12 or 21. Mm-hmm. But that allowed the Seahawks to not just go nickel, but to go dime mm-hmm. for a lot of the game without a worry of the running game running on them very much. It was kind of surprising. Bill Barnwell pointed this out. They used a Taylor Mumford, their sixth offensive lineman, on one play.
I remember that.
21 yards, and then never used him again.
Let me ask, and we don't have the answer sitting in front of us, what was their early game tendency in terms of 11?
I mean, it was the whole game. It was 11 all
time. I mean throughout the season?
They used 11. It was very heavily 11, yeah. Because part of it is they only had two tight ends.
Okay.
Right, so they had some 21 with this guy, Jack Westover, as the fullback. Mm-hmm. But if you used two tight ends, that was your two tight ends. Iridium 8845 says Hunter Henry is on a milk carton and the McDaniels offense needs a good tight end. In fact, I would say the McDaniels offense needs three.
Right. Needs two.
Maybe two good tight ends and one not so good tight end, but at least there needs to be three. Like I joked about this at midseason, but Madden always has a three tight end set in the Patriots playbook, and they didn't have three tight ends to put in the three tight end set. And this is something that they've always liked to do. They didn't have enough tight ends and they didn't use them in this game and they didn't use Mumford. And I don't quite know why.
I was wondering when I was hearing those tendencies and all, how much of what we were talking about with the Patriots was Patriots up by two touchdowns. And then they could go with their sixth offensive lineman because they were hammering teams in the regular season.
There is some of that, but some of during the season, they were putting in the sixth offensive lineman early in the game. It wasn't just late in the game that they were using the sixth offensive lineman.
Right.
But this would have been a chance to do it early in the game, right? Because, what was it, 9-0 at halftime? They had all the first half to run a sixth offensive lineman set if they wanted.
Right, it's not like it was 21-0 in the second quarter. It was a game, and you could have gone sixth all lineman. I guess their worry is if our – fourth and fifth offensive lineman can't block anybody. What's the sixth guy?
Well, I mean, the hope would be that he'd be better than a receiver that blocking guys. Certainly. But they were really only sending four for a lot of the game.
Yes.
And then they started sending some sim blitzes where they were sending only four, but one of them was Witherspoon. Mm-hmm. I liked the idea of Witherspoon as MVP, even though the sack fumble that he had was taken away and change to an interception.
Yeah.
I still like the idea of Witherspoon as MVP. I will say, even though DYAR did not really like his game, I like Kenneth Walker's MVP more than Myers. I'm glad they didn't give it to the kicker just because Seattle stalled out in the red zone five times. Like Myers didn't do anything. He hit five fairly easy kicks in reasonable weather. Mm-hmm. It's not a huge performance.
No, if it had been a bunch of 54-yarders, it would have been, let's give the kicker an MVP. But, you know, a very influential Seahawks fan was stumping for Myers. I refer, of course, to Ken Jennings of Jeopardy.
That's true. Nina Kimes was for Witherspoon.
Was for Witherspoon.
So she was posting about Witherspoon. Witherspoon should get the MVP.
I'm very comfortable with Walker because of where that game was in the second quarter where he breaks off those two runs.
Yes.
Then after the fumble, the first fumble by May, him getting 12-yard or 10-yard or getting them back down into field goal range. And the fact that Jackson Smith and Jigba was not available for big chunks of that game, needs somebody to step up and be the cornerstone of the offense. Walker did it. Obviously, Witherspoon had a big game. No Michael Dixon left, huh?
No, Michael Dixon would have been interesting. I mean, if you're going to give it to a special teams guy, I would have given it to Dixon over Myers.
Myers, right. And how about a little bit of Derek Hall love?
Yeah.
He was good. A guy.
I mean, Iridium says they should have given it to the entire defense. I mean, that's not how MVP works, but it would have been nice to have a defensive player get it. They had six sacks. Drake May set the NFL record for most sacks taken by a quarterback in an entire playoffs.
Really?
Joe Burrow had that record from 5 years ago.
Why do I feel like Cam Newton got sacked?
Four years ago. Yeah. Oh, because Cam Newton only played three games.
Okay.
Whereas Burrow played four and May played four. So May was sacked 21 times, not including the Witherspoon sack that was changed into a pick six for Nwosu.
Right. And that also would have been fumble number eight.
Yeah.
Yeah,
eight of the playoffs. Yes, that. I mean, we need, May is not perfect. They need to work on some things in the offseason. Right. I do say I don't like the attitude that people who supported Stafford for MVP took after this game. The attitude they should have taken is, well, if we were voting now, we would have all voted for Stafford.
Yeah.
Instead,
yeah,
the attitude that most Stafford supporters took was, mm-hmm, you should have seen this coming.
Mm-hmm.
Why can't you see the future?
Mm-hmm.
How did you vote for Drake May knowing that this was going to happen? Because you voters can see the future, which we can't.
Devil's advocate is that's just a flip side of the schedule argument.
Right. Well, I made the schedule argument. I mean, I said in my thing where I talked about voting for May that the schedule argument absolutely mattered. Like,
it matters, right.
May absolutely played an easier schedule than Stafford. There's no question. Right. But what people were saying, like Richard Sherman said, was how did you not know that May was going to struggle against Seattle, but Stafford destroyed Seattle? And the answer is, one, Stafford destroyed Seattle in part in a playoff game that hadn't happened yet.
Right, right.
And two,
right,
we didn't know that May would struggle against Seattle because it hadn't happened yet. Now, if you want to say, knowing what we know now,
mm-hmm,
do I as a voter wish that I could go back and re-vote and vote for Stafford?
Mm-hmm.
The answer is yes.
Have you?
But
have
I didn't know these things 3 weeks ago.
Have you considered that Richard Sherman's a platinum-plated a-hole? Have you factored that in?
I like it more than some ex-players, better than Prime.
Well, where are we setting the bar here? Yeah, I mean, sure, because Sherman's a bright guy and he speaks his mind, which is cool, but he's got his hang-ups and things like that. And all of this would matter a lot more if May was MVP and there was any feeling that there was some sort of miscarriage of whatever, but he wasn't. Stafford won. Why go back and relitigate it?
Right. And also the thing about Justin Herbert with Sam Monson picking Herbert is that people are like, May lost it because Sam Monson picked Herbert. No, he didn't. Sam Monson put Stafford second. If he didn't pick Herbert, he was going to pick Stafford. That's not why May lost.
Why are you putting this red meat in front of me?
Go ahead, do it.
No, I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to go on record and talk about the thought process that goes into Justin Herbert as MVP.
I'll admit that I considered giving him my fifth place vote.
Putting something in there to demonstrate.
And then I decided, Allen was just better.
Right. It's almost like you want to give Slater the fifth vote, saying, well, his absence caused this, you know? Like,
right. Yeah. Right. I mean, I don't think ESPN has yet run the thing where we give our little goof off predictions for next year, but I predicted Rams Chargers as the Super Bowl next year.
I don't know about the Chargers. The Rams
Slater and Alt back, and they're like third in cap space.
People have taken Alt and Slater and turned these guys into like the pillars of Hercules.
But they're also like third in cap space.
Okay. I'm still not there. They're like plus 1200. So like the odds makers agree with you, but the Rams are sitting there with being the Rams and two first round picks and cap space. So they're sitting there telling you like, don't be picking a Seahawks dynasty.
Also, it's an obnoxious little article, and I like the idea of picking the two LA teams to meet in both of their home stadium.
That's fun. See, that's fun.
I can
get behind that.
Frazier Lamont said, I missed the first few minutes, so this may have been covered. Subjectively, where does the defensive performance rank in Super Bowl history for you? I can tell you objectively by DVOA, but subjectively, first, where would you put this performance?
You know, I was thinking about this, and I was thinking about leads that I should have run, and like one of them was, what if the 1985 Bears were boring?
Yeah. I've said that on a lot of interviews I did last week. Part of the reason why no one understands how good the Seahawks are is they don't have personalities.
Right. They don't have personalities.
You don't know anything about these. You don't know anything about Leonard Williams. You don't know anything about Devin Witherspoon as people. Right. Like, I don't know anything about them.
Sherman was interesting. Michael Bennett was interesting. And then the 85 Bears were incredibly compelling. And the 2000 Ravens, a team that has like some of this vibe. And
Ray Lewis, incredibly compelling.
Compelling for whatever else you want to say about him. Ed Reed also was. They had other personalities on that team. So I don't know if it's one of the top defensive performances I've ever seen.
How would you put this compared to the Eagles last year?
That's tricky. I mean, I feel like this defensive performance season-wide feels better. That defensive performance
for the game Eagles, yeah, because the Eagles struggled at the start of the season. I will say for the single game, this was the sixth defensive performance, and it is slightly below last year's Eagles.
Yeah, that was
the two best by far are the 2000 Ravens against the Giants and 85 Bears against the Patriots.
Right. This belongs in the same conversation, right? In the top 10.
Below those two. I think this belongs with like the 2020 Buccaneers.
That's a good one.
And last year's Eagles.
The Buccaneers that intercepted Gannon 50 times. Like that's another really good one.
Yes, that's another one that's up there. Yes, absolutely. And then as far as the total DVOA for the Seahawks, they are the number four team of all time, including the playoffs.
So 1991 Commanders.
Yes.
2007.
85 Bears, 2007 Patriots.
What company? What amazing company.
And then a gap, and then the Seahawks, along with the 96 Packers and the 89 49ers. I mean, they really are that good. They really were. I mean, they lost three games by 6 points, one of which was to another team that my numbers say was historically great.
Right. Division foes, you know, two of them were division foes,
and one of them was a 3-point loss to Tampa, where if you look at the underlying stats, they outplayed Tampa.
Right. And Tampa was a solid team, obviously.
And they were more solid early in the season.
Yes.
Right? That was, I don't think Godwin, but that was when Igbuka was playing really well, and Mayfield was playing really well, and Evans was healthy, and their defense was better, and
And week one, it's Bosa stripping Darnold at the 20-yard line. So, like, a Hall of Famer makes a play to beat the Seahawks. That game, I remember, Levante David forces a turnover. Maybe it was an interception of Darnold. So, Hall of Famer makes a play. There was a lot of that. Yeah, when they lost, the Hall of Famer made the play. Like, in 85, the Bears lose one game. Dan Marino comes up and has a big game against them. That kind of performance.
Iridium asks, is the narrative that this is a down year hurting the Seahawks, public perception of the Seahawks?
Okay.
It might be. See, I don't think it's a down year. I think it's a wide range year.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I think that it's a year where the bad teams were really bad, especially on defense, and the good teams were, the top two teams were really, really good, especially on defense.
I think, but that perception of Mahomes being injured, the Ravens having, like, the big three in the AFC not there. Do I feel like a typical Chiefs team would have beaten those Seahawks? I don't know.
Maybe. No, yeah. I mean, I think it sort of depends in part on the status. If the Chiefs had the offensive line from 2020 or 2024, no.
Right. We've seen
Chiefs have the offensive line from 2019, maybe.
Right. We've seen Chiefs go out there and very specifically lose to that type of NFC team. So I can't see that. I can't project, well, what if the Bills were ever the Bills? Then we'd have a different history in front of us. So I don't know. And 10 years from now, no one's going to remember, like, why this team won.
Cascadia Pirate says, it's crazy that the top two teams played each other three times in a season. I believe that by DVOA, that's only happened one other time, which was 2008. The Eagles and Giants, and those teams were nowhere near as good as the Seahawks and Rams were this year.
Right. I'm shocked that they're that high.
They were 1-2 that year, but they weren't that high.
No, right. They could not have been that high. Not the 2008 Eagles remembered in story and song.
Right. The halftime show, I really enjoyed, by the way. I will say, last year, some of this, I think, is the difference between being there and being at home, although you were at home both years.
Yeah.
Last year, you don't see the choreography very well when you're in the stadium. And last year, we, the older reporters, were walking around being like, yeah, I don't get this. It's not for me. I was like, this is for, like, Charles McDonald and J.P. Acosta and Derek Klassen, and this is for all the 26-year-old guys, right?
Yeah.
Like, this Kendrick Lamar is not for me.
Right.
Whereas this show, I felt, not only was it a little bit more for me, I felt like I totally understood who it was for. It was choreographed and shot. The camera work was incredible.
Yeah. I don't know what it looked like on the field. And you're right. That's a consideration, but that's neither here nor there for 99.5% of the people watching. The choreography and camera work was amazing, and I understood the story.
Yes.
There was a story.
Yeah.
I haven't understood a story of a halftime show since it was Indiana Jones in like 1988 or whatever that was. And it was like, I get this. It's a wedding. I understand weddings.
Yes.
Yes. You know, there's uncles dancing and stuff like that. So I had to, I was going to do a joke cutting over when you did this. I was going, yeah, my favorite part was Ba to the Ba. I was going to do that joke. Could not drag it out of my
joke
soul.
About having watched. He lip synced apparently.
Oh, he lip synced because you have to, those songs are so difficult. You know, you,
yeah,
like the vocal range, the high notes of Sweet Home Alabama All Summer Long, the masterpiece that it is. You have to lip sync that.
Anyway, it was not okay, not to get too political, but some right winger posted there wasn't a single white person involved in the show. Which is hilarious because even if you don't believe that Hispanic people are, I mean, Hispanic right. people run the range, right? Like,
right.
But
right.
Lady Gaga is Italian. So apparently we've gone back to the 1900s when Italian people were not concerned.
So masking my ethnicity, people.
So stupid. God damn. next year, I feel like the Seahawks might be the 91 Redskins. I feel like this could be a one-year, wow, how amazing was this team when everything came together and they were good in every way. Mm-hmm. And that there may, you know, defense is less predictive than offense. Special teams is less predictive than defense. This team ruled on defense and special teams. They're probably going to take a step back next year. They're going to lose a couple of guys. Walker, I know. I feel like, I don't think anybody this morning is, you know, I feel like after every Super Bowl we talk about, is this a dynasty? I don't think anyone's doing that this year.
No. And you meant all the reasons you mentioned, and also the Rams.
Yeah.
With two first round picks and a franchise level quarterback that we have more faith in, who may or may not retire, but probably won't. And with cap space and with all these guys that are younger and like we know them a little better. So I'm not denigrating the Seahawks, but yeah, we're not doing the dynasty thing with this team. Certainly.
Big Cheese 77 says, you don't think Darnold is sustainable. Darnold was not sustainable this year. Darnold dropped to something like 18th in the second half of the season. Mm-hmm. He was great against the Rams in the playoffs. He was not good in the Super Bowl. That was a defensive victory. That was
he played well. He played well under
those. Kenneth Walker and the defense. He played well. I mean, he was not Trent Dilfer, but he played well.
He was
Darnold playing the average of how he was over the entire season is very sustainable. He could totally be the 10th best quarterback in the league.
Yeah, that's reasonable. I'm just saying he wasn't Justin Herbert, CJ Stroud, or Jarrett Stidham either. Okay. So he was coping with those situations better. But you're right. Like the sustainability of, is this a Joe Flacco? Is this a Eli? Or like a little, maybe somewhere in that range. Yeah, but the idea that he's going to be this perennial powerhouse is.
As for the Patriots, I mean, we know from Joe Burrow and Dan Marino, it's hard to get back, even if you make it there very young.
Yeah.
What I do think is that this is a team that with Drake May is going to be competitive probably for a long time. Like, I would not, even with a much harder schedule, it's hard to imagine them going less than 10-7 next year.
Right now I'm looking at like what looks like a 10-7 team. I need to see what that offensive line does as an answer.
I mean, with injuries, obviously they would go less than 10-7, but if they have an average number of injuries with a harder schedule, I feel like they're a 9-8, 10-7 team. And I feel like they're going to be a winning team. This is the kind of quarterback like the Bengals.
Yes.
When Burrow is healthy, the Bengals are a winning team. Even when they put a crap defense on the field, the Bengals are a winning team because of Burrow. And even though May struggled against the good defenses in the playoffs, it's still only 2 years. He's going to still get better. I feel very good as a Patriots fan that even if they don't make it back to the Super Bowl, at least they're going to be relevant for a few years.
I don't want to get involved in any of these. We talk about these conversations. Like the frauds were exposed. It's like that's not this. You know, there are questions that have to be answered. This might be good for them as an organization, including Vrabel, going back to the drawing board and say, what went wrong in that game? Because everybody has to look at that and say, that's on me. We have other things we have to accomplish.
Lisa Cuddy says, off-season question because there are no shows until the summer previews. We are going to do some draft shows. There'll be draft shows. Who's going to start for the Colts at quarterback in week one? If Danny Jones is still hurt, the draft class has one NFL starter. So Rivers or Malik Willis?
Anthony Richardson.
Anthony Richardson, I guess. Philip Rivers is done.
Yes.
I would think Malik Willis would go somewhere where he's going to be the starter and he's not going to be competing with Daniel Jones once Daniel Jones comes back from the injury.
Correct. That's my guess. And a team with no first round pick, so they can't even fool around with the idea of getting some kind of quarterback in the draft. Also, remember, Daniel Jones is a free agent.
So yes, they're going to have to not only get him healthy, but they'll have to re-sign him.
Yeah, Chris Ballard somehow has kept his job through all of this.
There are definitely some big quarterback questions for this offseason. What happens to Tua Tagovailoa? What happens to Kyler Murray?
Yeah.
What do the teams that are not the Raiders but need a quarterback do? Who takes Ty Summers? Is that the name of the kid from Alabama?
The kid from Alabama.
And can he play in the NFL? You know, does he go at the end of the second or the start of the third? And can he be a guy? And can he be a guy soon? And there's a lot of – it's just not a good quarterback draft.
It's not a good quarterback class, and you start looking at Mac Jones under contract still.
Yes, so San Francisco would – I mean, they're like, we want to keep him, which is NFL speak for trade with us, trade with us, trade with us.
Yeah, and give us something real for this guy. The Cardinals hold the rights to Brissett. Now, they might say, well, we're going to keep Brissett around because we have to do something with Murray. But, like, if you're looking for a bridge, this is a great chance for Malik Willis to cash in. But the question is where?
Iridium says someone has to start for the Steelers. It sounds kind of like he's coming back.
No. This is some kind of weird trolling behavior by Aaron Rodgers. There is no way he is like doing jump scares, horror villain, Freddy Krueger stuff to Mike McCarthy right now. There is no way those two reunite. That is like the worst like marriage getting back together since, I don't know, Kermit and Biggie. I don't know.
Which is another reason why you come off of this and you're like, our team just lost the Super Bowl and Drake may look bad in the playoffs, but it's another reason why you're very happy to be a Patriots fan right now because of look at all the teams with these messed up quarterback situations. If you're a fan of the Patriots, the Bills, the Chiefs, the Seahawks even, the Eagles even, you're really happy that you are not the Cardinals, that you are not the Jets, that you are not the Steelers, the Browns, et cetera, et cetera.
The Vikings.
Yeah, the Vikings. The Falcons. Can they mess around with J.J. McCarthy again? I don't think so. I've said about J.J. McCarthy, there were a couple of okay games near the end, but there's never been someone whose stats were so bad where a first-round pick. Whose stats were so bad where the film people were also like, this is irredeemable.
Right.
As opposed to Cam Ward, where the film people were like, oh, he does a lot of good things. Just put good things around him and good things will happen.
Yeah. And you look at McCarthy's last games. There was one that I think was legitimately pretty good. So much of it was, oh, here's the screen and go, and we're facing Clayton Toon, and he doesn't have to throw the ball after the second quarter.
See, this is an example of why we don't do too many shows in March. Korn 1999 says Seattle should draft Dixon Mias, and I don't know who that is.
That's a made-up name. I'm sorry, I don't know. I've started my draft work in earnest. Okay.
I will learn. If that's an actual prospect, I will know who that is by the time we do draft shows in April.
I hope it's not Dixon with an X and an S, though, because I'm
done. Oh, golly. KS, Jackson. It's Jackson Dart who's got the X and the S.
Yeah.
Jackson Smith-Njigba is just X. By the way, what was with that stupid comedian mispronouncing Smith-Njigba's name on purpose on awards night? That was the dumbest nonsense. He made a joke out of pronouncing Smith-Njigba's name. The dude just won the biggest award of his career, for crying out loud.
There's something really sad. I mean, I mispronounce names all the time by mistake and everything. Something really sad about, oh, no, it's an ethnic name. I can't handle
it. It was
that.
A black comedian, too. Like, what the hell?
Good Lord.
Like, this just in, other African-Americans have ethnic names.
Like everybody, lots of people have difficult to pronounce names. You should know what my mother's
name is. It's not even that difficult to pronounce. It's not like Juszczyk. It pronounces just like it's spelled.
It's not like Juszczyk. It's not like TJ Hushmanzada, which we all got used to very quickly. So I have no idea.
Yeah, that just had a lot of syllables. All right. I think that does it for the Super Bowl wrap-up show. Big Cheese says at least one person on the show mispronounced Tanier. Well, that's because Mike doesn't care how his name is pronounced.
Trick question. It is not mispronounceable. Trick question.
Yeah. We've gone through this. Mike doesn't care. You can pronounce it any way you want. Tanier, that's fine.
Yeah.
He'll take it. He's fine with that.
Yeah, they do that in New Orleans. It's great.
Mike is going to do a lot of draft prep. And I'm going to write some free agent stuff for ESPN. And I can't remember if we did a free agency wrap-up show last year. I kind of think we might do that at the end of February, beginning of March, when we get to free agency.
Yeah.
And then we'll do a couple of draft shows in April, and we'll have Ben Robinson on to do Grinding the Mocks. So there will be some off-season ads. One other question. Mike, what was your favorite commercial?
I don't know if I had one. I can't count Phil Collins toilets.
Not anything having to do with AI, that coin and crypto. No, that Coinbase crypto ad was, I was like, yeah, this is the ad that we're going to remember as the pets.com ad of like, what are we doing?
I think that the AI ads were written by AI for AI. Like, I couldn't even connect with them on any sort of level where I understood why I was supposed to care. It was a rough year for ads, in my opinion.
Yeah, I didn't. Yeah, it was, I guess my favorite ad is the Neil Diamond one for Hellman's Mayonnaise.
All right.
But I'm curious, with Andy Samberg, and that one did involve AI because I think they used AI to make Andy Samberg look more like Neil Diamond. In the western part of the country, was it an ad for Best Foods?
Oh, my God.
For people who don't know, the mayonnaise is called something different in two parts of the country. It's called Best Foods on the West Coast. It's called Hellman's on the East Coast and in the Midwest. What happens in California when you have an ad for a mayonnaise that they don't have? These are the questions that are why you watch this show, folks.
Will Levis will get to the bottom of this. He has nothing.
Will Levis will get to the, speaking of quarterbacks that be, you know, that won't be starting next year. All right. He's Mike Tanier. MikeTanier.substack.com. Make sure you read him for all kinds of draft coverage over the next couple months. Find out about these guys so that when we do a draft show, you know who they are. I'm Aaron Schatz, FTN Fantasy. Have a great February. We'll be back around free agency. Thank you so much for listening to the show and watching us all year long. You know, look out for when the next show is going to be. Don't forget to rate the show. Tell your friends about the show. All the stuff we usually say. Thanks for a great year, everyone. Congratulations to the Seahawks.